Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, Nick Braden, D-Maze, Marquise with you here on a Monday. Good to have you in for the next 2 hours. Taking you up until 10 o'clock today. Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7 will join us coming up at the bottom of the hour. And we kick off the second half of the show the same way we started today 2 hours ago. And that is getting into the Tennessee Volunteers. Boys, 34-3 loss in the Swamp. And the trend continues for Jeremy Pruitt and the Vols. In competition within this conference, maybe even out of the conference, they just lose ugly, lopsided games.
Yeah, Jeremy Pruitt's coached 16 games now in his career at Tennessee, and 7 of those games have been losses by 25 points or more, which means uncompetitive blowout defeats in half of the games, basically, you have coached at Tennessee. Offensive statistics, 90th in the country yards per play, 106th yards per game, 91st points per game, 101st in turnovers, 80th in sacks allowed, third down percentage, 66th in the nation. I'm not sure there's a stat on offense you can go to that they are even mildly successful. And this is paying the Jim Chaney, the highest paid offensive coordinator in college football. This is in year two of the development where you could argue the offensive line, the receiving core, and the running back group are all better than they were last year. The quarterback has taken a step back, major step back, and maybe not the starting quarterback anymore after getting benched on Saturday. Defensively, the numbers are only mildly better. And the average score for a Tennessee football game over the last 2 years against real competition, so Power 5 teams, your average score is 36-17. That's not acceptable. I am not suggesting that they should move on Jeremy Pruitt. That's just, again, I've been pretty consistent with that, I think, that you don't move on a coach 16 games into his career. I think you have to give them at least 2 or 3, if not more, seasons to prove yourself. But great coaches in the SEC at big-time programs, they win fast. And this program is going in the wrong direction.
You know, sometimes in life you just kind of realize things are the way they are, whether it's a job, a relationship, a friendship, and you have to cut bait. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going there with Pruitt, but on Friday I said I'm done with Marcus Mariota. After watching the Vols offense on Saturday, I'm done with Jarrett Garantano. I've seen all I need to see. It will never get exponentially better. He might have a game here and there where he balls out and he shines. But I think I know pretty definitively what I have in that quarterback. I would move on to a different quarterback at this point.
Okay. I understand what you're saying.
Like 2.5 years now.
No, but this is a guy that showed tremendous progress last year. And then you switch coordinators and you switch offenses. And then now he has to learn all of this stuff over again. You know, we got to take that into account, too, when you're talking, you know, his regression. This still is a young kid trying to figure out an offense. We saw what happened last year when he kind of sort of figured it out. You know, he looked a lot better than he did this year. Now he's trying to figure this thing out again. Whole new offense. So I'm not going to just say, you know what, they need to make a change. This kid doesn't get it. Now, after maybe 3 or 4 more games, because even if you throw in another guy, I don't think there's going to be this, wow, you know, this quarterback has changed, you know, UT's fortunes, and now they've gone on a 4-game winning streak. I think they're going to have the same old problems that they're having now. But the name on the jersey just changed at quarterback. That's all. I keep the young guy in, Garantano, in, and let him work his way through it. Again, you're not – just because you switch quarterbacks doesn't mean now all of a sudden you're going to contend for the East.
No, yeah, no, I wasn't saying
well,
that.
But can you be better?
I mean, score some points, show some life.
How much better can you be?
So what I saw from Brian Maurer on Saturday, I didn't see anything that tells me he's better than Jarrett Garantano. Now, it's his first ever game action, real game action, mm-hmm. against a really salty defense in the Florida Gators on the road in a hostile environment. Is that a fair, you know, cross-section of data to evaluate a true freshman quarterback? No. Brian Maurer, by the way, is, you know, he was number 482 nationally in the entire country. He is a high 3-star recruit who is, I think, the 18th best pro style quarterback in America, 58th in the state of Florida. So this is not a small recruit, but he's not a big time recruit. Mm-hmm. He actually, strange enough, reminded me a little bit of Josh Dobbs and his sort of lanky athletic ability. Listen, ironically listed as a pro-style passer, while Jared Garantano listed as a dual-threat passer as recruits. So there you go with that. He looks like he's got some mobility. He can move around a little bit. But, you know, when he dropped back in the pocket to make some throws, he'd throw the ball like 6 yards out of bounds on like a fade pattern. You're like, dude, you didn't even give your receiver a chance on that one. So it's not fair to use what we saw on Saturday as an evaluation mm-hmm. of him. You know, he's got 2 weeks. If you're going to make the switch to a starting quarterback, having 2 weeks to prepare is a smart time. The problem is you're going against Georgia. I don't think that's the right time to do it. I still think Jared Garantano gives you the best chance to win games. And that may be a sad statement about where this program is from a talent perspective, but I still think the guy who's played, you know, 20 games, 25 games, is still going to be your best bet to win. If you're going to be in close games with Mississippi State, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, those three look like they could be winnable. If they are winnable and you're in those games, I still think you need Garantano in there instead of the true freshman. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the true freshman's got some ability and he shows us something, but nothing I saw on Saturday told me that, even though that's maybe not a fair, you know, maybe that's not a fair shake for him because it's Florida on the road, you know, tough defense.
615-737-1025. We'll take your Vols calls, 737-1025. Brad in Nashville, next on Morning Drive. What's up, Brad?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Good.
Hey, let me tell you what my problem is with the ball is, you know, you want to talk about Maurer not being fair, but look at what Florida does. That kid hasn't started in 7 years. You know, it's just next man up. JG is not progressing. You bought into him. This is year two. You bought all in to him. And, you know, after year one, when you knew that he wasn't your guy, that's when you go to the transfer portal or you go recruit your guy for your system.
I think I get your point. I mean, as far as going from Franks to Trask, why is it that some programs can go to another quarterback who hasn't had really meaningful action in how many years and have success?
Well, you play the Tennessee defense. Kyle Trask, it's only sort of a joke. Kyle Trask has been there for like 4 years. Like he's battled Felipe Franks in summer camp every year for the starting job. So he's been close to being a starter. This is a true freshman. We're talking about bringing a true freshman who's never started a game in college football into the swamp and saying, "Hey, go play against Georgia or Alabama or you know whatever." I think it's different. Kyle Trask. Also, don't look now, but I'm not sure you want to compare Dan Mullen's coaching prowess to anything Tennessee's got. Just going to throw that out there as well.
Very true.
Dan Mullen is an elite offensive genius who turned Mississippi State quarterbacks into NFL quarterbacks. That's never been done before. He's the one who coached Tim Tebow at Florida. He's the one who developed Alex Smith at Utah. Dan Mullen is a fantastic offensive coach. Jim Chaney is just Jim Chaney. Jeremy Pruitt's not an offensive guy. So here's my issue with if you believe that I have no problem with Tennessee and the coaching staff thinking that Jared Garantano was going to take another step, that he was going to be in control of this offense. That's what we talked about this summer. He was going to have more control of the offense. Jim Chaney was going to allow him to do more things with the offense, have more control, and it was going to be more his. He showed big progress from 2016 or 2017 to 2018. I think everybody expected another step of growth from 18 to 19. I don't have a problem if that's the line Jeremy Pruitt uses to explain this situation. I don't have a problem with that. I think that's fair. If you are telling me that in March and in spring practice, you were worried about Jared Garantano, and you didn't do anything to address the issue instead of just bringing a true freshman three-star, then I've got a bigger issue with it. Then that's just lack of preparation, lack of planning, lack of foresight, whatever. I don't think that's reality. I think reality is, because the only time you can take the transfer is kind of in the offseason to prepare. I think we all assumed Jared Garantano was going to be pretty decent.
But think and about so where that, we were.
You know.
Back in July and August when we were at Media Days in Hoover and we were doing camp stuff with the Vols, we did the blind resume game on the show and we gave you the screenshot, you know, obviously in an audible fashion, of Justin Herbert and Jared Garantano.
Yeah.
And Garantano's numbers last year were better than Herbert, who many said could have been the first pick in the draft.
He was taken to Media Days by the coaching staff because he was the guy, right? Like, he was in Hoover answering questions, representing Tennessee football. I don't think that there should have been any reason for them to think, oh, it was going to go this poorly. The problem is it's gone this poorly, and you guys are responsible for it. The quarterback's responsible for it. The players are responsible for it, too. But so is the coaching staff.
I guess I'm just at a point where, yeah, you got a bye week. Yeah, you're going to get demolished by Georgia. But if you believe Garantano's not the answer and he still has another year and a half left, I mean, I guess technically there's time for him to become something. But you got to. This is a big boy conference, and you got to take your lumps. You're going to have to learn eventually with a young quarterback. Why not just take the shot right now and say, you know what, kid, we'll give you 2 weeks. Go out there and take your lumps against Georgia, and let's build off of it.
Well, why would you want to throw him in a situation like that, but a young kid
What do you
like
think
that?
He's with the supporting cast he has around him, is he going to – will you wait till the UAB game and they win 17-14?
Here's what I do.
You don't throw him in there versus Georgia.
How about this, though? What if you gave him first-team reps for 2 weeks and then you didn't start him? You started him against Mississippi State the following week. So what if he practices as the first team guy for 3 weeks in preparation for Mississippi State, knowing that you're just sacrificing Garantano to Georgia?
No, you can't do that either.
Just sacrifice the guy.
You know, it's because we thought he was the guy. Everybody praised him last year, Garantano, with showing poise, standing in the pocket amidst all of what was going on with the offensive line. And through that, he showed some maturity as a quarterback. But then, you know, some things change and offensive coordinators change. And, you know, he sort of takes a step back. I just think you let him ride it out and see what happens. Because, again, you're not going anywhere no time soon.
Yeah, I agree.
So see if this young man progresses in the offense. Don't just after 4 games say, you know what, we're going to go with the younger guy. Because it might get even worse. It's not going to get no better. I can almost guarantee you that. It can get worse.
But the only good thing about, and this is where college is very different than the NFL, in college you always will lose your quarterback at some point. The guy's going to leave. He's going to graduate. He's going to go pro. He's going to leave early, whatever. So you have to have a plan in place. And getting a young freshman prepared for his second season, there is some value in that. If you know the season's already lost, and you can maybe if you think that Maurer is the guy for next year, can you get him starts this year to make him better next year? That's a thing in college that doesn't exist in the NFL. That's a thing that you can do in college. Choked up by this quarterback situation?
Exactly. I mean, between Mariota and Garantano, I'm just emotional right now. Wes Rucker will join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll take your Vols calls when we come back. 615-737-1025. It is Morning Drive here on a Monday on ESPN 102.5 Game.
You guys, you know I get emotional about college football. It's my baby. I'm a nerd. I got emotional on Saturday night because I could not find the Arizona State-Colorado game. Yes, I know I'm the only human being in Nashville that was emotional about not being able to find a Pac-12 After Dark game. But you know what? Xfinity has me covered. This is why you make the switch to Xfinity, and you never use the other guys anymore. Because it's got the Pac-12 network, and I didn't know where it was. Just like if my wife has no clue what any of the channel numbers are on the Xfinity dial. You don't need to. You have the X1 voice remote because Xfinity enhances technology, constantly working. Smart resume technology, by the way. You're watching on demand. You can fast forward through commercials. It'll stop on its own when the programming starts again. This is Xfinity. They're constantly working to make your life simple, easy, and awesome. Pac-12, I just hit the little button. I said, Pac-12 Network. Boom. It up pops the game. And late at night, I'm watching Colorado and Arizona State. Old Herm Edwards running up and down the sideline just yelling. It was a heck of a game. And I couldn't find it. But my Xfinity X1 voice remote helped me. Just like any other channel, any other piece of programming, you know, if you got a title of a movie or an actor or an actress you love, just say it right into the remote. And it will do the work for you. Xfinity, making your life simple, easy, and awesome. Check them out, 1-800-XFINITY. Of course, is the phone number. Xfinity.com is the website, or pop into a store today. Just let them help you make your life simple, easy, and awesome. Xfinity.
It is Morning Drive, 818 here on a Monday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Marquise with you. Couple of tweets. We got Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7. He'll join us coming up at 8:30 this morning. But Brent says, how the hell can it get any worse for the Vols? I guess he's referring to the quarterback change. And I guess that's my point. If you're going to lose, 48% of your games in the Pruitt era by 4 scores or more with Jarrett Garantano as your quarterback, and I don't know that Maurer's the long-term answer, but if he is, wouldn't you like to break him in and maybe get 3 years out of him?
Yeah, I think that's an okay strategy to employ. If your thought is, hey, this is going to be the guy moving forward. My concern is that he's not the guy. Now, we have no clue. There's no basis for that that opinion. If you can decide on a couple of plays whether or not a quarterback's going to be the starting quarterback or not, then you need to be in a different line of work. You need to be working for Tennessee or something, or Nick Saban. So if they believe, though, inside the walls of that administration that he is the future of the program, he's not Tua, he's not one of these big five-star guys that is automatically the heir apparent, right? Like Ryan Helinski at South Carolina, who they're going to face in a couple of weeks, is clearly the heir apparent to South Carolina. Five-star kid stepping in as a freshman behind Jake Bentley, clearly the guy. Tua, when he showed up, you know, behind Jalen Hurts, when Trevor Lawrence got to Clemson behind Kelly Bryant, everyone knew these guys were the guy. If you think he is that, then I think there's some merit to putting him out there. Take your lumps, learn how to become an SEC quarterback, lose some games, but be better for it in the long term. If he's just a stopgap and he's just a placeholder and you don't think he's the answer long term, then you need to try to win games now and not punt on the season, and Jerick Garantano probably gives you the best chance to do that, but that's up to the coaching staff.
Now, if you're putting Morrow in, to me that's saying you're punting on the season.
Kind of.
And does that change the narrative for Jeremy Pruitt? Does it buy him more time? Because I think that's the question you asked off air. One of you guys asked that question off air. Does that buy Jeremy Pruitt time if he goes to the younger quarterback?
Yes. I don't know
if it does. I think you're punting on the season if you do that. Because like you said, Braden, as bad as Garantano has looked at times this season, he still gives you the best chance to win. And if you say, you know what, I'm going to go with the younger guy, then that's telling, at least it's telling me, and maybe Vol fans and alums think different, but that's telling me you're punting on a season.
Now, Bob sends us a tweet. Now, Bob is not a Tennessee fan. He's a Washington Husky fan, but he does say the program is totally cooked. There's no amount of money on the planet that they can throw at an established, winning, awesome coach to come to Knoxville. Nobody wants to live there, so they're done. They're stuck from now on. I mean, I disagree with everything in that tweet.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have heard me say this, and I'll repeat the stats on this. If you're the 11th most financially lucrative football program in the country with the 7th most wins all time, you've competed for national championships in the last 25 to 30 years. I mean, you've got facilities that are amongst the best in the country. You have a 100,000-seat stadium. There is no reason for Tennessee football not to be good. There's no reason. They have every built-in advantage that every other major program has to be successful. Is the culture and the climate right now attractive to high-name, high big-time coaches? No, it's not, clearly. They had to work their way down the list to Jeremy Pruitt. Whatever number he was on the list, when John Curry started the AADC, when he started the search, if Jeremy Pruitt was 15th or 18th or 19th, I don't care. He wasn't at the top of the list. And it's why Philip Fulmer, once he took the AD job, you know, made the decision he did, is because he couldn't get anybody else. And they couldn't get anybody else. So there is something to be said about, is it the Haslam family make? Is it boosters that are meddling? That's been the past problems. Is it the president or the chancellor that doesn't have enough power to force the boosters to back off? Like, there is a power structure decision-making problem at Tennessee. That's been that way when they pushed Fulmer out the last couple of years when Fulmer was there, because Fulmer, they could have fired Fulmer earlier and they didn't. The Lane Kiffin situation, Derek Dooley, God bless America. You know, Butch Jones with all the cliches was awesome and sexy for a couple years and then completely terrible. There's just no stability at the top. I don't have any faith. How about this? I don't have any trust or faith in the people who are making the big decisions at Tennessee. And that is largely the Haslam family. Now you've got a new chancellor, a new president, and now Philip Fulmer. And those are the people that you have to have faith in to make the right decision. And who has ultimate faith in that? I mean, I know Tennessee fans blindly put faith in Fulmer because he won a championship as a football coach. Does that mean he's qualified to be an AD? Who knows?
But it's really, to me, it's the misallocation of assets, because clearly they have the resources and the assets to get anything they want. I mean, if you can give Jim Chaney $1.5 million to be the OC, the highest paid guy in the country, and get these results, it's about finding the right guy. Now, they got the wrong head coach, in my opinion, at this point. I thought Pruitt was the guy. I don't believe he's the guy. I'm not calling for his head at this point, but it doesn't look like he's the right guy. I don't believe that there's this notion out there that you can't get the right guy. I think everybody has a price, and I think they have the money to get the right guy It's just about pinpointing who that person is.
Which goes back to decision-making. I mean, that's what, again, that's been my issue with Tennessee for 15 years. And no program, I've said this 100 times, no program, no matter how big and powerful you are, is immune to bad decisions, is immune to bad coaching. Every major program has gone through a downswing because they've hired bad coaches. It happened at LSU. It's happened at Alabama. It's happened at Texas. It's happened at look at USC right now. Like, it's happened at USC. It's happened at every program, other than really Ohio State. And, Derek, you're always quick to point that out. Mm-hmm. Ohio State basically hasn't missed on
– they are recession-proof.
They have not missed on a coaching hire in, like, 60 years, which is it's unfathomable. Because look at Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Florida hired Will Muschamp, Ron Zook, and – and just in the last 20 years, Florida has hired Ron Zook, Will Muschamp, and Jim McElwain. That's three terrible decisions. And they've also hired Dan Mullen and Steve Spurrier. I mean, Urban Meyer. So It's all about making the right decisions. And I have no faith in the power brokers at Tennessee to make the right decisions right now.
7371025. Richard is next on Morning Drive. What's up, Richard?
Hey, good morning. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing well.
Doing good.
You know, my question is the SEC as a conference evolving? That's okay. I'm sitting here at a railroad crossing waiting for the train to clear. Anyhow, the SEC seems to be evolving as a conference. Tennessee's football program seems to be caught in the middle. Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Auburn, the Deep South teams, because of the culture of the Deep South in football, seems to be way ahead of the Vols. I lived, grew up in Huntsville and played Little League football during my elementary school years. The programs there in elementary school were advanced. The coaching was advanced. I remember the weigh-ins. Kids throwing up in the locker rooms because they were a pound overweight to try to make the teams.
This sounds like it sounds like a negative argument, Richard.
Yeah, exactly.
Good call, Richard. Just don't get hit by that train.
I don't know what is eventual. By the way, you can at Nick Kale for dropping you there, buddy.
I played Little League football.
Yeah,
here's my analysis.
Yeah, I don't know where you're going with that. I will say this. The state of Tennessee, if you're talking about, like, sort of the state of Alabama and how the Alabama programs raise up good football players.
Exactly.
Alabama's always been better than Tennessee at producing talent. That's always been the case. Georgia right now is skyrocketed from fifth, sixth, seventh in the nation in producing talent to passing California. Georgia is now as fertile a hotbed of recruiting as it gets. And, oh, by the way, that helps Tennessee. Because Jeremy Pruitt has done a good job recruiting there. Tennessee as a state is way better today at producing talent than it was in 1998 when they won a national title.
Yeah.
You get a lot more D1 talent out of the state of Tennessee today.
I think you do, but I can sort of see what he's saying as far as
what does the Deep South have to do with it? I'm not sure I follow that.
Yeah, I don't. But I guess what he's saying is this. In states like Florida, Alabama, Georgia, because Tennessee is like that fringe. Yeah, they're a southern state, but so many, transplants, and it's becoming more so of, yeah, it's a southern state, but it's becoming more so of state that, other people are moving here from the north and the west and the east, and it's not just this, southern state as we would think, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, and the way they think about football from a little league standpoint, it's totally different than the way they think about football here in Tennessee. And how, the SEC, it does mean more, but I think it means more in Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Texas, stuff like states like that.
Than Tennessee?
Oh, I think it does. In a state? Yes. Oh, I think it does.
I would say marginally.
Because I think it does from this aspect. Even though Florida, Texas, they have pro teams. But that one Alabama does it, and they think about football totally different than what people here in Tennessee think about it. Especially like college and Little League and all this other stuff.
Right, but to suggest.
But if you just look at the facilities they're building for high schools. For little leagues and all this other stuff in these certain states, they think about football a little bit different than what other states think about it. And maybe that's his kind of argument. They think about it different. They love it just a tad bit more in those states.
I don't disagree with you, Texas especially, but that doesn't mean that are any less passionate about Tennessee football than the fans are for Georgia or Florida or LSU or Texas. The fans for Tennessee, as we've seen on social media, are too passionate. Mm-hmm. so much so that they act like complete idiots at times. I think Tennessee fans are just as passionate about their team as almost anybody else in the country.
All right, coming up next, we will talk to a guy who's passionate about Tennessee football, Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7. He joins us after this on Morning Drive. Back in here on a Monday, it's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stick to sports coming up at about 8:45 this morning. John Fox, former NFL head coach, current analyst for ESPN's NFL coverage, will join us to kick off the final hour of the show. And Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7, in a matter of moments. So we look at this with the Vols and, you know, moving forward. I think we're at a point now, and I hate to say it, but where do the wins come? You look at the schedule, other than UAB, and I don't think you can even sit there definitively and claim that to be a victory.
No, you can't.
We could really be looking at a 2 or 3 win season for Jeremy Pruitt, taking a big step back from last year.
Man, it's tough, and it all started, the first game of the season, and because everyone kind of penciled that game in as a, they didn't even think about it. Oh, Georgia State, that's a win.
No, 3-0 was penciled in.
Yeah, then BYU, that's a win. Then UTC, that's a win. Florida is where they're going to get their first loss, But then if you start off 3-0, that Florida game could be a toss-up because now you got momentum built and you can go into, Gainesville and you can possibly pull out a victory somehow, some way. Well, that didn't happen. Now you got Georgia, Mississippi State, Alabama, South Carolina. UAB might be a victory. UK, Missouri, Vandy. I don't see another victory in here other than UAB. Honestly, this thing is starting to map itself out for UT, the way they're playing on the field, where's this win coming
from? So winless in conference play.
I don't think they do that. But
who do they beat in conference?
It's fair to have that conversation. Now, again, what do we know about Florida? I think is a fair question to ask here. Mm-hmm. What do we know about Florida? Is Florida truly a top 10 team? They've won against Miami with 10 sacks on defense. They beat a Kentucky team while losing their starting quarterback on the road, a Kentucky team that just lost to Mississippi State, who, oh, by the way, is on Tennessee's schedule in a couple of weeks. Vandy and Missouri have owned them lately, but they get Vandy at home. South Carolina just got trounced by Missouri. So I think Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt, those three home games are opportunities to play extremely well and have a Kentucky type of game from last year. But I don't feel confident. I mean, Georgia and Alabama. come on. Mississippi State, South Carolina, Vandy. Those are the three. I don't think you go on the road and beat Missouri. I think Missouri's far better than what people think. Kentucky, that one on paper, you're probably more evenly matched than what the experts look at. But that game's on the road, and Kentucky's a team that plays well at home. They've lost a couple of tough games to Florida and Mississippi State. I don't think there's any shame in the way Kentucky has started the season without their starting quarterback either. They've lost their guy. So is there hope? Yes, I think you can win some games. But it's going to be on the coaching staff to overachieve, right? They're going to have to overachieve to beat Mississippi State. They're going to have to overachieve to beat South Carolina. They're going to have to overachieve to beat Vanderbilt. And you should never be in a place where you have to, as Tennessee, the University of Tennessee, to overachieve to win those games. I understand it's a rebuild and it's only year two. We got to be patient. I get all of that. There is never an okay situation for Tennessee to be, if they play over their heads, they can beat South Carolina, 1-3 South Carolina. That shouldn't be a thing for Tennessee, ever.
But think about what we're asking for from a coaching staff where, Jeremy Pruitt is this defensive guru under Nick Saban. But my point being, again, we saw it this past Saturday 4 or 5 times. They can't get aligned properly.
No, you're absolutely right.
And then offensively, you're paying a guy $1.5 million, and that offense is so stagnant and unimaginative, it's not even funny.
Derek, here's the thing. If you were, if I hired Derek Mason to be the defensive coordinator at Florida State under Jimbo Fisher, at Georgia under Mark Richt, and under at Alabama at Nick Saban, having literally never called a defense, have you ever called a defensive play in college football or the NFL?
No, I'm Madden, yeah.
Okay. With only your only experience being on Madden against your teenage son. I'm willing to bet you that you could hold water at Florida State, Georgia, and Alabama as a defensive coordinator, right? Because you'd have some of the best players in America. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be a question about a coordinator who was hired off of elite-level teams because you have elite-level advantages. So there's always going to be questions about that. It's why Nick Saban assistants and Belichick assistants get hired all the time and most of them fail. Because it's a lot easier to be a coordinator at Alabama, Florida State, and Georgia than it is at Troy or Vanderbilt for that matter. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think you could go be a decent defensive coordinator at Florida State under Jimbo Fisher in 2013 with Jalen Ramsey and
you're absolutely right. But here's the thing with UT, and you, we're looking at their schedule, and you say, well, they got Vandy at home. They should win. UK, they're more a little bit more evenly matched. But I guarantee you this. If they walk into that UK game, OFA, and I mean in the conference, just OFA in the conference, they're not winning UK. They're not beating Missouri, and they're damn sure not beating Vandy. That team will quit on him.
And that more than almost anything else would be as bad a sign for the coaching staff as possible, is the quit, right? Because we saw it last year. They quit on him against Missouri, and they quit on him against Vandy last year.
That team will be, in their minds, they would be like, man, let's just get the season over with. Let's get into next season, and let's do, go about it that way.
Now, I had Tennessee at 6-6 with wins over Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt. Those are the three. I've had them at 3-5 in the conference, 3-0 in the non-conference. That was their six wins, in my opinion. I didn't think they were going to win against Missouri or Kentucky on the road, and then against the good teams that they're playing. Mississippi State, South Carolina, Vanderbilt are still the three games you point to and say, if you don't quit in those games and you play hard and you get wins, 4-8, okay, you got to show progress in year three. There's no question. You're entering a year on the hot seat, but it's not cratering as bad as maybe the Butch. If you win three games in the SEC, it's not nearly as bad as the 0-8 year under Butch. By definition. So there, you can talk your way into the third season if you can win a couple games in the SEC. And beat UAB, maybe end up with five wins.
The whole quitting on your coach thing is interesting because we ripped him in the first hour of the show, Juwan Jennings, for that drop, even though it was a hot pass. But there is one guy that comes to compete every week. It's Juwan Jennings.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
That dude, you talk about having dog in you. Juwan Jennings comes to fight every week.
Yep.
I wish we could take that desire and instill that in the other 65-plus players.
I wish we could, too. And there's probably some other guys that are fighting, but they are just not as talented as Jennings, and you don't see it. It doesn't pop out to you on screen, but you watch Jennings. And,
he just plays violently.
Yeah, besides that one pass he dropped, he plays with a passion. He plays – he plays with a confidence and an aggressiveness that you wish everyone else sort of played with on that team, too. And it's unfortunate that I even had to, say that if they get to that UK game without winning a game in the conference, then those guys are going to look, especially if they get down early versus UK. And I know we're talking, further in the future here. But if they get down early, because nothing tells me
they'd be 2-7 at that point.
Yeah, nothing tells me schedule that they are going to win any conference games. Vandy has owned them the last 4 years. Missouri, basically the same. And UK, it's been UK is a much better team, even after losing all of that firepower last year on offense and defense. But if they don't win that game, or if they go into that game OFA in a conference, I can't see them winning nothing after that.
Supposed to be the best coaching staff in the SEC, making all this money. Show us. That's it. Just you got 8 games left to go. Show us that you're worth it.
Still a lot to do on the show today. John Fox is going to join us in about 15 minutes. We'll go around the NFL at 9:30. But up next, our favorite edition of Stick to Sports on a Monday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show. Start your Monday or your Sunday morning off with the kickoff show from 7 to 9:30 a.m. And then NFL Pregame Live will be live from the George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30. Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, Chris Sanders. It's all brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House.
Boomba's.
Yeah.
Got one of those by the house in the East Nashville. I lived across the street from one of them.
Do you?
Dude, there is a...
I don't like cheating on 5 points, but they're pretty good.
There's a pizza joint on Nolensville, way down as you go like past Brentwood into Nolensville.
Nolensville Road has the best sort of like ethnic food in the city.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Nolensville Road.
Some good stuff.
Good food.
Mm-hmm. All right, Hollywood, let's stick to sports.
Is he sounding pretty good right now?
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw it in the trash.
Basically.
And stick to sports. And now, on Morning Drive.
All right, D-May, stick to sports is brought to you by...
The good folks at Decorating Den Interior. Stick with the pros at Decorating Den when you're ready to decorate your home, office, or outdoor spaces. Request a complimentary, which is free, appointment online at decoratingden.com.
Number one.
All right, and Nick, you'll be able to vouch for this because I feel like Philly fans are very passionate about their sports.
No,
very, very passionate. I know I'm speaking to the choir here, but this one Philly fan had to explain. Basically, he was saving kids out of a fire out of an apartment complex in his building, and he was explaining to the newscaster about how he went about doing this. And here's what this Philly man had to say.
Seen a guy hanging out the window, screaming that his kids was in there and things like that. So I ran to the back door, see if it was open, and it was. I ran upstairs, and then I was greeted with smoke. I ran back downstairs. By that time, the ladder truck was pulling up, and ironically, one of my old coworkers took the ladder off the truck, raised it up, and was assisting people down. My man just started throwing babies out the window. Wow. We was catching them, unlike Aguilar.
So a quick little shot at Aguilar as he's a hero now, but fortunately had to take a quick shot at Nelson Aguilar in the process of saving these children. So kudos to that Philly guy for saving a bunch of children from a burning building, but also a shot at Nelson Aguilar for dropping passes.
Didn't he catch like a ridiculously tough touchdown yesterday?
He's had days where he looks really good, and then he has days where he drops passes. Like, he's a more accomplished five-star version of Taywan Taylor.
Oh, wow.
He's like the Eagles' Taywan Taylor.
He catches a lot more passes than Taywan Taylor does. That's pretty funny, though. Not only to have... Hey, first of all, great way to go on actually doing something great for somebody else. That's amazing. I would like to believe that we'd all react that way in that moment, which is hard to do. But also having the wherewithal to slide in a jab at your football team.
Philly fans are just brutal,
man. I'm saving babies left and right. I can catch better than the receivers can for the Eagles.
What is wrong with y'all?
So funny, man.
It just means more? It's the only explanation I have.
The NFL. It just means
more. We don't have college football in Philadelphia, so all we got is Pro Bowl.
Temple covers.
Yeah, that's true.
Number two.
All right, I feel like I shouldn't have to explain this to people, but... it's becoming a problem, and I'm noticing it, and I have to address it. So, people, if a car is moving, do not be on top of the car as it's moving. So there's two instances, and I'm going to send you guys a video of the second instance. But a Hermitage man was riding on top of a car headed to Mount Juliet, and he was arrested. And also,
short trip.
And I'm sending you guys a video, but in my neck of the woods... Lower Antioch, there was a woman dancing, twerking on top of Mustang as it was moving.
That's a hard car to twerk on.
Was
top
her name
of,
Sally? Too.
Was her name Sally?
Mustang Sally?
No.
Yeah, stop.
Tamitha? Twerking Tamitha.
Twerking Tamitha. So this girl is on top of a Mustang in Antioch dancing on top of a car.
Oh, did the splits.
And did the splits on top of the car. I feel like I shouldn't have to explain this, but people, if a car is moving, you might not want to be on top of the car as it's moving.
So he has his flashers on, so he's driving really slowly, thank goodness. What this looks like, though, is the start of some new millennial viral nonsense, is what this looks
like. She almost failed, too.
And I'm just, like, of all the cars you'd want to dance on top of, I feel like a Mustang is one of the hardest cars to dance on top of. Why not just go with a truck?
And they're going over the railroad tracks.
Yeah, right. They're at a stop sign. They're at an intersection.
What is wrong with these young... What is wrong with you young people?
Man, look, when do you see me dancing on top of a car?
I'm not saying you, but I'm just saying, like...
You're not young anymore, Mustangs, by the way.
Young people.
You're almost 30.
I'm close to 30.
Yeah, buddy. This looks like
getting on the internet is not the end-all, be-all, okay? Please don't jeopardize your life just to get a bunch of clicks.
Well, what's crazy about it is I think you're doing this, obviously, if you're a girl and you're twerking on top of a car, you're doing this because you think it's sexy. I have not once stopped in the middle of the road and be like, is that girl dancing on top of a Mustang? I just found my future wife.
I need to get her.
Yeah. Excuse me, Tabitha. Twerking Tabitha.
Has social media and the smartphone made us more stupid as a society, or is it just capturing the idiots that we already knew existed?
Capturing the
idiots. It's hit and miss.
A little bit of both?
Yeah. It's hit and miss.
Gosh, I don't understand this.
The desire to go viral is a real
psychological
thing. And so these things creep up, and all of a sudden people are doing this stuff all over Harlem Shake, whatever, like a million things.
Just like the whole
this one's more dangerous than
the whole Drake thing when they get out and they were dancing, the Kiki thing.
Oh, getting out of the car,
yeah, dancing and whatnot. It's like, and they had to tell people to stop because people are getting hit in the street doing this.
Is the Chinese fire drill, I don't even know if that's an appropriate term anymore. Is the Chinese fire drill like the original one of these? Remember, a car would pull up in like the 70s or 80s, and a car would pull up and everybody get out of the car and change seats and get into a different car door at like a stop sign.
But that was cool.
But there's no Twitter.
There was
no Twitter. Like,
I know, but that wasn't putting yourself, because you're stopped at a light. That wasn't putting yourself, I guess it sort of was.
It's not exactly
but
smart.
But you weren't on top of your car.
You can tell D-Mace did that back in the 80s on date night. Everybody, let's go. Chinese fire drill.
Well, it's funny because there was a
dance. Or the fire drill. Let's just say the fire drill.
Yeah, I don't know what the appropriate nomenclature is now.
So there's a dance in Oakland that's called Ghost Ride the Whip. Pretty much E-40 made it popular with a song called Tell Me When to Go. Ghost Ride the Whip. So basically,
Ghost Ride the Whip?
Ghost Ride the Whip.
Ghost Ride the Whip.
Ghost Ride the Whip.
Ghost Ride the Whip.
There you go. So basically, the car would be moving. The car would still be moving, and you would just get out of your car. Kind of like how In My Feelings is.
And then you dance while it's rolling down the
street. Yeah, you dance while it's moving. So yeah, that's not a good idea.
Also seems like a dangerous thing to do.
Yeah, young people. I don't want to call young people. You know what? That whole YOLO, y'all really took it to the nth degree. Y'all really did. The whole YOLO.
You only live once?
If I'm only live once, then I don't want to go out that way doing something stupid.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So YOLO, I'm glad they got rid of that.
Marquise, 1990, 2019, Death, Ghost Riding the Whip.
YOLO.
What do you want us to put on the headstone?
Here's a very deep philosophical, I guess, question, evolutionary question. If Josh Upton was producing Stick to Sports this morning, he would say, speaking of YOLO, would you rather live once or come back and live a second life? I don't know that I'd want to live a second life. Even if my life was completely different and I was a different person.
That's a good question.
Would you want to come back and do life all over again?
Some people believe you do.
Yeah, reincarnation. The question is, do you know that you're doing it a second time? Because if I know I'm doing it a second time, then I can fix all of my stupid mistakes of adolescence. Like, just understand life at the age of like 9, and then I could do life again. I feel like I'd do life a lot better. And it's not like I'm really screwing it up right now.
Hey, here's a good one for you.
You know what I mean? You know how much wiser you'd do things if you knew everything?
Here's a good one for you. It might get me in trouble, but here's a good one for you.
Would you rather?
Would you rather die and come back as a black man?
Nobody gets that joke, but it's so funny. Like, would you rather?
And I'm talking to Brayden.
The question I think was: would you rather Like, would you rather be born 100 years in the future or 100 yards in the past? And Derek's like, no, never in the
no,
past.
Exactly.
Not one time Somebody ever.
Asked, who asked me that? Was it Josh? That
yeah, I think it was Josh.
Josh, like, yeah.
Josh
no.
No
chance we're doing, like, no, I'm All going right. forward.
That's it for Stick to Sports. ESPN's John Fox will join us when we come back. Former NFL head coach, now NFL analyst on ESPN. Stay there. It's Morning Drive.